You're listening to the three-time Utah Sports Broadcaster of the Year. This is the Bill Riley Show on Utah's number one sports talk, ESPN 700.
All right, noontime hour on this Friday as it snows outside here in Salt Lake City today. At least it gives us a semblance of football weather. Spring football, no, it feels more like November football here, but Kyle Whittingham's guys are practicing again with spring football. We're in the midst of it right now. March Madness going on as well. And a really interesting piece, if you're a Pac-12 football fan, that was up on the up on ESPN.com. I think it posted yesterday. That's yesterday's when I read it, but it's been up over the last couple of days. It's called the Coach Prime Effect. We've talked a lot about it. People are interested, whether you're a Colorado fan or not. There's intrigue with it. It's inside the first 100 days at Colorado with Deion Sanders. Our friend Kyle Bonagura took part in the article, along with Adam Rittenberg, also a friend of this show. And Kyle joins us right now. Kyle, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you back on again. So the first 100 days of the Deion era, I'm sorry, the Prime era, the Coach Prime era. You're not allowed to call him Deion. It's Coach Prime era at Colorado. Obviously, this is an interesting piece to write. You and Rittenberg collaborated on it. What was your big takeaway from it?
Yeah, it's such a unique hire, right? For like all the obvious reasons, one being Deion Sanders. But I think like the takeaway that I took away from the whole reporting process was that, you know, Colorado needed to do something to make itself relevant and give itself a chance to, not fall further and further behind. And so they had to go outside the box. And this is about as outside the box as you can go. And the amount of interest and excitement that they've generated is unrivaled in this college football coaching carousel cycle, right? I mean, the fact that this is a program that has never sold tickets for the spring game before, and now they're on pace to sell it out, for the first time ever is kind of speaks to the interest on a local level, right? Season tickets are up to an all-time high. And then, you know, nationally, you know, they're selling gear at a level that they've never seen before. So this prime effect is real. And of course we'll find out how it translates on the field, but certainly as far as, you know, putting Colorado on the map and making them relevant, you know, that was accomplished overnight.
The one thing I did notice in the article was I don't believe there was any direct anything from Coach Prime himself. It sounds like you guys probably didn't have the access that 99% of the world doesn't have to Deion either.
You know, Adam did sit down with him in Boulder. And
oh, he did.
You know,
okay.
Had a chance to talk with him there are some quotes from him in the article. It's, you know, in the lead, he kind of talks about how he's a need to be needed person. And if you show me a need, I'm there. And kind of plays that up of where that was part of, you know, his appeal of going to Colorado is that he felt like he could make a difference. And whether that's just him, whether him just like speaking to a reporter or if it's true is like, I guess, up for interpretation there. But, he did have some interesting stuff to tell Adam about kind of his process and how he's trying to hope that this is a bigger deal than what he did at Jackson State. And the fact that, you know, he went to Jackson State in the first place was a little bit more outlandish and unbelievable than him going to a Power 5 school. But, you know, I know Adam had a good conversation with him and was kind of, you know, left more interested in the process than when he got there.
I thought some of the more interesting quotes in the story were from Darian Hagan. See, I'm old enough to remember Darian Hagan, and that's when Colorado was a national program under Bill McCartney. I think the most interesting part of it was, though, and outside the prime stuff, was Darian Hagan has survived like seven head coaches. He's been on the staff since 2005 there. That's unbelievable, which means he's a legend there and must be a decent coach too. But I thought he gave pretty good perspective on what Colorado once was and what they're trying to get back to.
Yeah, no, like we could have, like we were, Adam and I joked about it through the writing process. Like we could just use every quote we could have used from Darian Hagan. He, you know, there's a lot of good stuff he said that didn't even make the article. He was so good. But yeah, I think that perspective is really interesting, right? Because I mean, this is a guy who was a quarterback on the team that was the national champions in 1990. And so that was his college experience, set kind of the expectations for what Colorado football should be. Goes back in 05, and they've really been one of the worst Power 5 teams in college football during that period, right? So he's experienced the highest of highs, the lowest of lows, and has that perspective to be able to share all points in between. And kind of that's why, you know, a lot of people now, if you're kind of newer to the sport or you hopped in the last 20 years, you don't really view Colorado in the way that, you know, people of his generation do, and that like know what's possible and how culturally relevant they were. Like, right. That's the thing, is not only were they a good team for several years, but I mean, this was a team that had a national fan base, like California big into Colorado for like no reason other than they were cool and good and fun to watch and all of those things. And we haven't seen that from the Buffs in a really long time. And Darian was very hopeful that, you know, this hire Deion, it obviously makes them culturally relevant, but then kind of is able to kind of, you know, to take them back in a direction where the on-field stuff was just as big.
It all seemed to be pretty positive. Did you guys come across anything in your reporting or people you talked to where people were either skeptical or not so on board with the Coach Prime effect?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone has the caveat of like, we'll see, right? And I think, you know, the part about it that is like the most obvious is like, what's the worst that could happen? And Adam talked to one of the, you know, I guess it was a deputy athletic director or someone in the athletic department. It's like, listen, like, we were 1-11 last year. So it doesn't like, if you go 0-12, of course, that's a disaster, but like, it's not that much different from where they were already, right? There's just, they've completely bottomed out as a program. And so there's no way it can get, I mean, you could drum up a scenario where it could get worse, but like, it's very hard to imagine how things could be worse on the field than they have been. And they were under Carl Durrell this last year. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons to be optimistic that they can be good. I mean, Deion went to Jackson State, and sure, it's a FCS program that, you know, it's a different level, right? But they became good almost overnight. He hired a great staff at Colorado with a lot of experience in college football that should, you know, ease concerns about his lack of experience in college football. You know, overnight, they've become more appealing to some of the top recruits in the country. They've brought in a lot of really talented transfers through the portal. Recruiting is up. And so from a talent perspective, they've improved the roster. So it's a staff that it's experienced. They've got more talent, and they expect to draw, you know, a lot more eyes. That's pretty obvious. So like, everything that's happened right now, like on balance, you say, wow, Colorado's in a much better spot to be competitive this year than they were under previous leadership.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Kyle Bonniger, ESPN.com, who wrote the piece along with Adam Rittenberg that's up there right now that you can read on the Coach Prime effect at Colorado, the first 100 days of Deion Sanders. I've talked to a lot of people around the Pac-12, too, coaches, staff, people here, people other places, and most people's takeaway is, hey, they're going to be better. There's more talent in the program now, but most people in the Pac-12 say, let's pump the brakes for just a minute because, you know, this is not USC. This is not Lincoln Riley stepping to USC a year ago. There was a lot of talent at USC that was underutilized. There just wasn't much, if at all, anything at Colorado. So he'll improve it with the talent he's brought in. But, you know, football's not basketball where you could change it overnight with one or two players if you don't have anything there. He's still got to build, especially the lines of scrimmage up there in Boulder.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think anyone should realistically expect them to, you know, compete in the Pac-12 South, or I guess there's no divisions anymore, but compete in the conference overnight. I mean, I think it's go to a bowl game, right? Because you're defining success differently in Colorado than you were at a place like USC, right? Lincoln Riley is the guy to get you over the hump and compete at the national level, because that's kind of where, you know, that's the expectations at USC. For Colorado, you know, maybe it's theoretically possible for them to be a national program again one day, or at least compete at that level. Like, you can't write that off. But I think it's, you know, when you go 1-11, the expectations are different, right? And I think it's improvement and significant improvement. I think if you go to a bowl game, that's, you know, you have six times as many wins the next year. That's pretty significant, right? And so, like, and everyone's perspective is going to be a little bit different here, like, in how to define success. Like, Colorado, like, yeah, of course they're going to talk a big game in the off season about what they hope to do. Like, but every program does that, right? Every program says we want to compete. And I remember sitting down with Mike McIntyre in 2016 in the off season. He's like, we want to compete for the conference title. And it seemed insane at the time. They had just gone 1-8 the year before. And then they went 8-1 in the conference and, you know, went to the Pac-12 title game. So like, we've seen turnarounds, like, you know, that are, you know, significant turnarounds in the conference, like in the not so distant past, including in Boulder. But I think Deion, like the Deion story is really more about, it's Deion Sanders. He's a Hall of Famer. He's one of the most high profile athletes. You know, I'm 38 years old of my lifetime, right? Like, everyone knows who Deion Sanders is two sports, all of that. And because when you have a guy who's just like so well known, it's just going to appeal to a broader group of people, right? So Pac-12 fans were going to pay attention to Colorado because, you know, it's a Pac-12 team, and whoever the new coach was, well, there's going to be some level of intrigue. But Deion Sanders is just going to carry a lot more weight nationally and make them relevant in a much, much more broad, way, I guess.
Kyle Bonaguro with us here from ESPN.com, talking a little Deion and Coach Prime at Colorado. I was asking this question yesterday with spring football beginning, and I was just kind of, I hosted the Utah football banquet the other night, so I was kind of going around the room asking players and coaches and staff, who do you think is biggest threat to Utah making a three-peat? If Utah is not going to defend, give me the school you think's got the best chance to unseat Utah's Pac-12 champion next year.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I think there's two that come to mind right away. I mean, USC, for the reasons we talked about, you got the Heisman Trophy winner coming back and a proven coach and like a rising talent level. And then I really like Washington as the other option. They've got a lot coming back on offense. Michael Penix was getting Heisman votes. You know, last year I think he finished like eighth in the Heisman balloting. He led the nation in passing. He's got his top three receivers coming back. So they got a lot of weapons on offense. So it's those two. I would group them all in that same tier: USC, Utah, and Washington. Oregon's probably right. I would say probably in that four spot for me right now, for what it's worth. Like worth maybe not a whole lot, but like yeah, I think I really like what Washington's doing. I think Kalen DeBoer is a really impressive coach and kind of runs his program in a way that reminds me of the way Kyle has done it at Utah for so long. It's just very businesslike and all about the football, right? And he's had a long track record of success at several different stops. And I was very impressed with the job he did last year in year one. And I think there's like the whole, you know, saying that, you know, you should make your best progress in year two, where you're kind of building off that foundation that he laid down last year. So I like the Huskies. I like the Trojans. And of course, Utah has earned its spot to be at the top of the mountain.
Yeah. I like Washington too on paper today. The unknown for me is Washington didn't have to play SC or Utah last year. They had a great year, but they didn't have to play. But I think their defense right now, I would feel better about betting on Washington's defense than I would on USC's defense. And to me, Penix may not be as dynamic overall as a quarterback, but, man, that dude can sling it. So I'd probably say Washington now. I'm just not I'm not sure how much better the USC defense or offense can get. I mean, they were awfully damn dynamic last year with Williams, and they had Jordan Addison, and they had the running backs and everything else. I'm not saying they won't be, but is there another step to that offense, or is it pretty much what it was last year? And I just don't know how good that defense is. I like Oregon a lot, but they lost a lot, and there's a new offensive coordinator coming in to work with Bo Nix. You know, to me, the outlier X factor, I'm not sure if they can win the championship, but they could sure spoil it. And to me, I don't care what DJU is. He's going to be an upgrade over whatever Oregon State's had the last few years.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big Jonathan Smith guy. I think, you know, again, you talked about guys who get the most out of their talent. You know, he does that at Oregon State in a way that's, you know, few in the country do. And for me, that's the problem, though, is that there's a talent level at Oregon State. He's maximized it. I mean, I think they've had three 10-win seasons, like, in school history. One of them was last year. So, like, to contextualize, like, how impressive last year was for Oregon State. And, like, if we're going to question, like, how much better USC can get, you know, offensively, like, you know, defensively with Oregon State, they lose a lot on that side of the ball. They were the top-ranked defense in the conference last year and have a lot of talent to replace there. So are they able to slot new guys in to play at that level? Like, fair question to ask, right? But, yeah, I mean, Oregon State's going to beat – they're going to beat some very good teams next year and certainly be relevant, whether they finish in the top two at the end of the year. I'm skeptical that's going to be the case, but they're certainly going to factor into the race by beating other teams that are kind of in the mix for sure.
Can I ask you a quick soccer question before we get out of here?
Absolutely.
Is Greg Berhalter really the right guy moving forward, or does U.S. soccer need to make a clean break, not just because of the results, but also because of all the drama?
Yeah, so, like, I mean, U.S. soccer has said that he remains a candidate, or he's like, there's no legal preclusion from preventing him from being a candidate. He's not going to be a candidate for the job. They're going to move on from him. But if they say publicly that, you know, he's not a candidate, there's like potential legal issues and that are in play there. Like, we don't have to get into the nitty gritty here, but like, he's not going to be the coach of the team. I think at the end of his tenure, He hit a bunch of very important boxes, right? They qualified for the World Cup, which was not a given. They advanced out of the group. They win the Gold Cup. They win the Nations League. He was very effective in dual national recruitment, Serginho Dest, Yunus Musa, like, which is important for the U.S. program. Left it in a better place competitively than when he got it. And I think it's very clear that, you know, they're going to move on from him. Whether they say that publicly is not the case, but there's no expectation that he'll remain the coach.
We'll talk more soccer when we get a little bit closer to some qualifying and some fun stuff there. Hey, thanks for doing this as always. Great catching up with you, Kyle. And I encourage everybody to give this a read. If you're a Pac-12 football fan, whether Utah or beyond, it's a really good look inside of Colorado football in the first 100 days of Coach Prime. It's up there right now at ESPN.com. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks, Bill.
There you go. Kyle Bonagura with us here on the Bill Riley Show today.